Yeah, what? Wow.
I can explain.
Honestly, I would tell. Sorry, not.
Go right to bed, Michael.
What do you mean by reviewed the journals?
Hey folks, we're just waiting a bit. It's not just it's not yet 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, so we're gonna wait for Christy, my co-convener here, and a couple of other folks. As you know, today we're going to be doing mark orders demos. Woohoo! Yay! You have a high five for that. We'll probably get started like a minute or two after 12. Oh, and I see someone came as a group of five. Wow. Stephanie, where are you calling in from?
We are at Utah State.
Utah State. Are you on Folio?
Yes, as of very recently, we are.
Wow, congrats. I don't think, have you ever been to our meeting yet? Maybe you have. I don't know.
No, we are actually all hopping on here because we desperately need to learn stuff, and we were told this SIG might be a really good one for us to come watch.
Wow, great. Well, thanks for dropping in. Let me sh so we not only have this is our meeting, obviously one to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a lab session, which is on Thursdays. Let me get you, I'm going to post a link to our space and information. The lab session is on Thursdays from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the link that I just put in there has information about our meetings, information about our lab sessions, documentation, and all of that. So, and of course, we have a Slack channel for our lab sessions as well as one for our regular SIG. So, just feel free to ask questions. We're a really supportive group. So yeah, welcome. Do we have anyone else who's new?
I'm also from Utah State. I'm just not in the room.
Well, welcome, Kathy. Lots of folks from Utah. So yeah, this is great. Yeah. Oh, that is a good question, Chrissy. We didn't have a lot of volunteers for the alternate lab session times. But with these new folks, if there is a time that is better for you, please suggest that and we'll see if we can accommodate it. And it could be, maybe the times we suggested for the alternate just wasn't something that people could get to. So we're definitely flexible. So, Christy, I just kind of jumped on, but did you want to take it away?
Sure, I can do that. I'm just taking some notes in the announcement section. The one thing that I do want to say as another announcement before we get to our main agenda is to remind everybody that we had the discussion, I guess it was earlier in the spring. No, it feels like it was a long time ago, but I don't think it actually was, about our top five priorities as a SIG. And those have been added to, let me copy this link, and put it in the chat. And those are, right there. And Jennifer and I will be discussing those with the product council on September 4th. So if you want to revisit those, we can have some offline discussion about those if we need to. It was actually interesting to go back and remind myself what our process floated to the top as the community-wide priorities. I did notice that there was nothing to do with orders in there. Which seems to be all I'm thinking about these days. So I'm happy to say that we're going to be talking a lot about orders today. Are there any other announcements?
Just a quick one. I also created a page. I put it out, I also created. That's not the one I wanted to put in there. I wanted to put in the link to the page of our community priorities so that we could track them over time. So you'll see on the link that I have, it's the ones we put in for 2025. So next year, for 2026. We might have maybe the five, which is in progress now, that might be gone, and we might have another one there. So, just to help us with tracking of these priorities, I also created actually some time ago, there's a dashboard for list of issues reviewed, which I added that link to our meetings going forward, because I created one for those that need review and those that have been reviewed. So, that was it.
What was that dashboard again?
Oh, it's the list of issues reviewed.
Okay.
And that's on in our links. You'll see it is list of issues reviewed by SIG. So that will be in our template going forward. Yeah, at the
Okay,
top of the
thanks.
agenda. Yeah, sure thing.
So I am actually taking notes, and I'm actually happy to do that today because I don't think there's going to be a lot of notes, unless there is a note taker who would like to step up. Okay. With that, we're going to get started with our demonstrations today. So we have our colleagues from Stanford and Michigan State who are going to be talking about their processes for batch import of mark orders. Thank you very much for doing this and sharing with us today. If you have a process in place for batch import of mark orders using data import, reach out and let me know. And maybe next month we can have another round of demonstrations. And with that, I will turn it over to our colleagues from Stanford to get us started.
Thanks, Christy. My name is Nicole Yonetta, and I'm a library specialist here at Stanford University Library's Acquisitions Department. And I'm joined today by Lynn Chang, who is the Receiving and Special Projects Librarian here in Acquisitions, and Kevin Kishimoto, who is the Head of Music Metadata Services at our Music Library. And just some background info that is useful is that the version of Folio we're using is Caesonalia, and we have CSP8 installed. We have two basic processes for loading orders using data import. I think I feel pretty lucky that we have an automated system set in place. Our library systems team has set up a vendor management app using Airflow, and we're able to both fetch files from vendor servers and then also set up profiles to auto-load some of the files too. And then I'm also manually loading some, and the ones that I'm manually loading are ones that tend to need some editing, or maybe like the 980 needs some more information added before we can load them into Folio. So I'll go ahead and share my screen now. All right. And so this is just a breakdown of the 980 subfields. And the MARC 980 is what we use to convey all of the order information to Folio. I'm happy to share this document if anyone would find it useful. I'm sure there must be some version of it that exists online somewhere also. And then I'll show you an example of a MARC record that we might get from a vendor. And so this is something we consider a complete record, and so it doesn't need to be edited in any way before it's loaded. So this is one that would be auto-loaded. And you can see the 980 right here. And I kind of just deconstructed the 980 information down here. So you can see that subfield A is the location, subfield B is the fund, subfield C is a vendor order ID number, and that's supplied by the vendor. Sometimes it's a unique number, like in this case, Gobi provides unique ID numbers in the order, and sometimes it's the same as the 001. And our vendor management app has some pre-processing capabilities set up, and we actually move the MARC 001 to the 035 second indicator 9 because in Folio, they set the 001 as the instance HRID. And you can see that subfield D is the format of the item. So subfield E has the price information. Typically, that's something that goes in subfield M, but I think this was when we were using the Lehigh tool to load orders before Poppy was released. And so, in order to make sure that our firm orders were, the funds were not encumbered for those, we asked the vendors to put the price in subfield E instead of subfield M because the Lehigh tool automatically had the price mapped to subfield M. And so our vendors place a zero in subfield M. So subfield G is the subaccount number for the vendor. H is the invoice number. K is the currency, which is USD. M is usually set to zero just so that it doesn't encumber anything for our firm orders. Q is the quantity, and we always set that to one, and I'll show you in our profile what that looks like. R is the loan type. T is the order type, which in this case is approval. U is the vendor order reference number type for subfield C, and subfield V is our vendor code. And now I'll give you a look at what our profiles look like. So this is an approval order profile. And it's important to put these in this order when you're building the job profile. So first it would be the create order, and then the instance, holdings, and item. And I'll give you a look at how we mapped everything. So you can see the name, and then the incoming record type is Mark, and it's an order record that's being created. We always have our order status set to open when it's created. That way, it's ready to receive, and if it is pending, then there's no instance linked to it until the order is opened. We also set this to one for the override purchase order lines limit setting because we want each record to have its own PO and POL. If you leave this blank, I think what it does is it will take all of the records in one file and create one PO, and then a link to that PO will be an individual POL for each title in the file. So our vendor information is coming from the 980V. It's a one-time order, and then like this will obviously vary by institution for the acquisition units and the addresses. For the title, we have that coming from the Mark 245A, and then since if you want the space to be formatted, you have to have it set here to space, quotation, space, quotation, then another space, and then the 245B. For the receiving note, we pull that from the 980N, and we have this else dash or hyphen in the quotation marks because there is a bug where if you don't have anything in the 980N and no receiving note is created at the time of the order creation, then you won't be able to go back and add one later and an error message will appear. And so that's why we always have to have something there. For the publication date, we have 264C, else 260C, just depending on what kind of record we're getting. And for the publisher, 264B, else 260B, and we have the edition as the 250A. We have the contributor set to 100A, and personal name just as the default. We don't map the ISBN just because there were a lot of errors with the ISBN validation, when creating orders. I don't know if that's improved lately. We haven't really tested it out again to see. And acquisition method, since this is specific to approval order creation, then it's just set to approval plan. These are all going to be approval orders for physical resources. I think the mark source is automatically set there. And for the selector, we pull that information from the 980F. We also used a synchronized receiving workflow. That means that when the order is created, it will also generate an expected piece in the receiving app, which is what our receivers use to receive items. For the vendor information down here, the vendor reference number is the 980C, and then the vendor reference type is the 980U. We also put the sub-account information here under account number from the 980G. So since this is an approval order and it's okay for the price to be encumbered, we pull the price from the 980E. We always just set the quantity physical to one, no matter how many items are actually coming in on the record. I know that there were some inconsistencies mentioned in the Slack channel recently, so I think just to be on the safe side, we always just have it set to one. The fund information is from the 980B, and we set it to 100. If there are any split funds, we usually just manually adjust that later. And for the location, that's coming from the 980A, and again, we just set the quantity physical to one. And the material type we have set here to book, but it could also be pulled from the 980D. And I'll also show you what a firm order looks like. It will the mapping will look basically the same, except it will be purchase for the acquisition method instead. And then for our purposes, we map the price to the internal note field here. And then for the unit price, we map it to the M, which is set to zero. And then when the receivers are receiving it, usually they will just copy and paste the price down here. And we do that because for our firm or purchase orders, we are not sure when we'll receive the actual item, especially like if the publication date gets pushed out or something. And so it just makes more sense for us to wait to add the price at the time of receipt. Let's see. I can show you. I can try to demo loading an order in one of our test environments. We'll see if it works. When I was trying it out yesterday, one worked and one did not. So we'll see. Fingers crossed that this will go through. Okay. And if it doesn't, since it hasn't started yet, I'll show you what it would look like if it actually ran and completed. So this is one that I loaded yesterday, and you can see that it says everything that was supposed to be created was created, and I can show you what the order looks like. So it has all of the information that it pulled from the MARC record. And since this is an approval, the price was actually loaded here. And let's see if it ever started. Oh, okay. Yay, it worked. Okay. So I can show you this as well. It would just basically look the same. And it's an open order, so the receipt and payment statuses are awaiting receipt and awaiting payment. Yeah, and it looks good otherwise. All right, well, that's all I had in terms of my demo. Sorry, did someone have a comment or a question? Okay, well, if not, I'll hand it over to Kevin and he can talk about some of the pain points we've experienced.
Hi, everyone. I haven't tested my mic this morning, but I'm assuming it's working. And I am going to steal your. Okay, there. Got it. Share. Oh, let me move this first. So, hi, I'm Kevin. I am I'm in music metadata. I work in the music library. The way that things are set up at Stanford is that the music library, can you see my screen? My slide? Okay, good.
Yes.
The music library has its own acquisitions department through which we order and receive scores and recordings. We have I think one of the reasons this happened in the past, this has been set up this way for years, is because ordering, particularly scores, is a little difficult because you have to know differences between formats of printed music and if you're ordering the correct version of it and such. So we have our own acquisitions. It's not a department, it's a person, but we have a tech services department within the music library. So I just wanted to give a short, really quick example of our workflow, and then I'm going to talk about some pain points that have come up in learning and using data import. And I don't want to be the guy who complains a lot, but because I am a real big fan of data import, this is way more stuff than I was able to do in the past before we implemented Folio. So, if you're new to data import, please keep trying. It's got its issues, but it's not so bad. So we're gonna do slideshow. I only use this workflow for one of our vendors. It's a smaller vendor operation. We get a lot of our scores through a very large vendor in Europe, but this is one that a domestic vendor who I've been working with for a couple years now. Basically, this only works
Oh.
for our approval workflows because whenever we do firm orders for our whenever we do firm orders from this vendor, we create the orders manually and then send them the orders through email. So the vendor, when they're filling an approval order or approval plan thing, they will fill up a box and they will send us an email with the invoices. These are like the physical, what would be the paper invoices that come in the box too. And they also deposit an MRC, a MARC file, into a shared folder that we've created with them. Their MARC files are slightly different than the ones that Nicole showed. And it's because, well, I asked them, can you structure your MARC file this way? And they're like, well, we don't really know how, so we're just going to give you what we have. And I had to sort of recreate the profile that Nicole shared with me. It works great. It's just you had to do a little bit of extra work on that, but it seems to be fine. The MARC file that they give us is an ACK level record, our ACK level records, in that they're mostly just title and very basic information, and we will do full cataloging on the items at a later date after they've been received. So then at that point, I will take the MARC file and I will use the data import profile that was created for this vendor, and I will load it in, and it creates orders, instances, holdings, and items in that process. And then I save the data import log, the job log, into a spreadsheet with the invoice number so that our receiving specialist can use that to find the records that were loaded. We find that this is a little more efficient than doing a search, by title. Although we do check for duplicates too, so maybe we're doing extra work, but I find that it's easier to get to the order records immediately through the data import log. And then a few weeks later, the shipment arrives in the box, and we open the box and sort everything using the order on the invoice, because we need to verify that everything's there and that it's the correct item and it's the correct format. So we sort everything into order by how it's listed on the piece of paper. And then we receive the items. And This is where the pain points come in, but I'll just say that we write the POL numbers on the paper invoice by hand. It's easier than doing it, trying to do it digitally. And then we write the instance HRIDs on a slip of paper and we insert it into the item. And that's for cataloging purposes later. None of these items that we get from this vendor are barcoded or pre-barcoded, so we have to have a way to identify and find the instances when we catalog them. And then we have to re okay, so one of the issues that I'll bring up is that the instance HRIDs and the POL numbers are not in the same order as the invoice or as the mark file that is given to us, and thus the invoice that we have in our hands, the paper invoice. So then we reorder everything into instance HRID order so that we can put it on the shelf. This is during the receiving process, because in order to find a specific item before it's been cataloged and barcoded, the instance HRID is really the only way we can find it again. I mean, these are a lot of things are musical scores, which are, very skinny and they don't have spine titles. This is the only way we could do it. And then we send the paper invoice with the POL numbers written on it to the payments department, which is a central library department. And then they create the folio invoice. And they use whatever numbers we wrote on to wrote on the paper. They use the POL numbers there to find the POLs in folio and attach them to the invoice. So it's because things are not in order, it just adds a little bit of mental burden, I'll say, to the whole process. And I think the biggest thing I've noticed is that later, when I want to check in on a POL or an invoice that contained certain POLs, it's difficult, mostly or often, because the numbers aren't consecutive and you don't know where the POL numbers begin and end, and they're not in any order. So I'm gonna, let's see. So here are my pain points. These are the main ones that I've noticed along the way, and I'll try to explain what some of them mean. So I suspect this is across the board with data import, and I suspect it's some sort of mechanical, the way that data import processes the data when it's importing. But data import does not create the instances or the orders in the order that the mark file is created. So you have order, you have record number one, but in the actual HRID order or the POL order, it might be record number 56. And we've talked about it a little bit here at Stanford, and I haven't really quite figured out where the ordering comes from. I just think it's just magic or, pixies or whatever, just making things whatever order they want. So this makes the receiving process a little bit difficult because you have to match the entries in the data import log with what, you're receiving items on an invoice that has 100 things on it. You start at number one, and then you look through your data import log until you find number one in the data import log. And I'll talk a little bit about that too. Let's see. If there are multiple invoices in a single mark file, we found that it mixes them up. So you will have POLs from invoice number one, and then a POL from invoice number two, and then another POL from invoice number one, and then a POL from invoice number three. And it just kind of, it doesn't sort them. So you have to perform an additional step in which I use Mark Edit to split out the invoices so that each file has only one invoice. This helps our process also. And then one of the issues that I don't know if this is universal, but I tend to run data import jobs that crash for some reason. And I think It may just be the system itself that it maybe needs more memory. I don't know. But if something crash, if a data import job crashes in the middle, or errors out, you spend a lot of time trying to figure out what actually worked and what didn't. The data import logs are not always clear about what it did, what happened. And sometimes orders may be created that are not linked to instances, but the instances exist, and you have to find them separately. And then you have to go through this sort of folio gymnastics process in which you unopen the order, and then you link the instance, and then you reopen the order. And you have to do it manually. There's no way to match on orders, pre-existing orders, in order to do this process. At least not in the UI. There might be a way to do it through API. Sometimes instances aren't created, but you don't know without searching by title or something like that. And both of these steps, it can happen in the same data import. Sometimes half of them will be created but not linked, and half of them will not be created at all. And you don't really know until you look at them. So it's a little bit, this is the hardest part about the process. Sometimes the orders are created with multiple items. I haven't quite figured out why that happens. And it might be my problem. I don't know if it's my profile or something, but these items are unbarcoded, but they're set to on order. And so you can't delete them. And Nicole showed me a trick where you have to fake out Sfolio. You have to add a fake barcode to the item record, and then you can check it in with that fake barcode, and then you can delete it, because when you check it in, it'll go from on order to available. So it's this really silly workaround. It works, but it doesn't make any sense. But that's what happens sometimes. And then the data import logs might be inaccurate. Sometimes they show errors that something has not, it says, no action. It'll have error, no action. But if you click on the error log, it'll actually show a bunch of stuff that has already been created, and it's fully functional, and it works great. And then another complaint I have is that the data import logs sort functionality doesn't seem to actually sort anything. And I can show you what I mean with that. I just have a screen here. So these numbers over here are the number of the MARC record within the file. And so this is the second record in the file, and this is the 15th and the but I want to find the first one in the file. But if I click on this, it doesn't seem to do anything. I can't figure out what the sort actually does. It doesn't do anything with title either. So it doesn't the sort functionality here doesn't help in the receiving process. I had some, what was this one? Oh, this was just a demo of the unordered records, or a screenshot. This one is a screenshot showing this is the order of the records within the MARC file and on the printed invoice. But as you can see, the POL numbers are totally out of order. I don't know how it orders these. And then this is one of the example that Nicole showed me this morning. I mean, she shared this job log with me this morning. So there's 11 errors here according to this. But if you look at the error log, some of the errors actually went fully through. And if you click on any of these links, I mean, these aren't linked here, but if you click on any of them, everything's fine. So it thinks it didn't, it thinks there was an error, but it seems to not be an error. So I think those are all my slides. Yes. So those are the pain points I've brought up. I want to say again that I really love data import. I think that that's something that this is a great functionality. I just would like it to be more refined. Okay, thank you. Do I stop my share now?
Thank you. So there actually is a question in chat for you, Kevin. You mentioned you guys dedupe. Can you elaborate more about when that happens and what the process is like? And then after you answer that question, we will turn it over to Autumn from Michigan State.
The deduping process, most of the time work, it's just doing a search in our catalog to see if we already own a version. The thing with printed music is it tends to be republished, reprinted often, and sometimes the vendors don't tell you that this is a reprint of something that was originally published in 1968 or something. So we just do a quick search in our catalog to make sure we don't already own these things. Perhaps we could revise our workflow to maybe clean it up, but this is the process that we've been doing for decades now, I guess, or at least as long as I've been around for 10 years. So at least one decade, this is the process we've been doing. So that's really the deduping process we use. I think in music, we tend to get new editions of a certain piece of music, and then there are reprints, and we want to buy the new editions. They're newly edited, they have more information, but we don't want a strict reprint. So we have to be careful when we do that. And since these are approval plans, we don't have the full control over which ones they send us and which ones they don't.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm the one who answered the question. So, do you do the dedupe before you do the order import bulk importing the p or do you do it? I assume you do it after you import the order and then you take all the.
Yeah. We usually do it right after we import the records. And then we can do a search in the catalog and see if there's two records in there that are exact matches, then we would probably just suppress the new one and send it back to the vendor. Like I said, I could probably stick in this step in the process somewhere else and maybe make things more efficient, but that's kind of where we do it at this point.
Thank you. Thank you. I was just wondering because I think sounds like for our monograph order, we there's this pre-order searching, acquisition staff do that. So I was just trying to see if there's a system way of deduping instead of manually search and search inventory. Thank you.
No, it's all manual.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. And I apologize to have to switch really quickly, but I want to make sure that Autumn has the full 20 minutes to present. Autumn, are you ready?
Yes, I am. If I can
There you
get
go.
my camera to stay
Perfect.
on. I will share my screen here quickly. Hi everyone. If we haven't met officially, I'm Autumn Faulkner from Michigan State University. Disclaimer right up front, I am a cataloger. I have not worked in acquisitions, and my understanding of acquisitions processes is random and acquired by osmosis mostly. So I'm here representing my colleague Kim Wilgenen, who does all of our order loading via data import, and she has designed these job profiles that I'm going to give you a look at. And I'm going to do my best to share the info from the notes that she left me. She had to be on vacation, or she's enjoying some time away from the workplace this week. So probably the biggest takeaway for you is that we do not create orders as open. We always create them as pending. So we actually have sort of a two-step job profile process where, so for instance, an example of our Yankee approval plan uses Oh, and I'm not even showing you the right thing. So we're looking at the field mapping for our approvals here. So we get the MARC file for these approval plans. We have mapped various things, but we aren't doing a lot of, unlike what we do for cataloging, where we encode values for the folio record fields into the MARC records before we load them in. These job profiles are tailored to each vendor and each type of order that we may need to create. So we have quite a proliferation. You can see I go. All of these job profiles are used for different scenarios for creating orders. So my YBP example here gets very specific. Importing stuff from the regular MARC fields, as you might expect, supplying some of the values down here. For PO line. And we have asked the vendor to supply a vendor reference number in the 935A. And this is used in the subsequent step of the process as a match point. So once these are created, and I'm going to go slowly so you can get a look at the values that Kim has set up here. Yeah, that's probably everything you want to see. So once this initial load is done with YBP 77 or one of the other YBPs or whatever. The order's created, it's pending, and then the same MARC file is loaded back in using job profile number 2, which is the purpose is to create the linked instance and to mark it as suppressed and uncatalogued. We don't actually create holdings and items until point of cataloging. This is a decision we might be revisiting, but when we migrated to Folio, there was no straightforward way to do order, instance, holdings, item, and control some of the factors of public display. So anyway, lots of internal workflowy stuff affecting our decisions there. So once the order is open and the instance is created and suppressed, things move on to catalogers who overlay on the created instance and use coded 9XX fields to supply values for the holdings and the item records. So I can give you a look. Yeah, okay. Ooh, sorry, too many tabs. Let me show you an example of a recently run. Let's do the GOBI2 firm order. So this isn't an approval. This is a firm order title. Our order information for these actually comes through the API. And then once that order is created as pending, then GOBI2 is used to create the related instance. So you can see Here we've got the mark is created, the instance is updated. It is linked to, because it's matching on that 935A vendor reference number. And I have that match profile pulled up here. So the incoming mark, it's the same file that, well, in the approvals plan, it's the same file. So matching on that vendor reference number, and using that to update to create the mark source record and update the instance. And then a week or so later, a cataloger gets to it, and then we use one of our numerous cataloging job profiles, depending on the scenario again and the type of material. Let me double check. So these are Kim's notes, which I'm happy to share. And you can see here, she's kind of outlined her workflow with pending an instance only. This depends on that Folio business logic for opening records rather than sort of encoding that into the job profile. And I believe that is everything I have to share with you. Questions, I will do my best to answer.
So thank you so much, everyone, for presenting. What questions do we have for our presenters today?
I just want to say that I'm happy that I watched Autumn's thing and she's mentions matching the orders on the matching to orders using a 9XX field. I didn't even think about that. I was trying to figure out a way to match on orders and it wasn't something that even came to mind, but this would help a lot, you know, in the cases when our data import crashes and I have several dozen records that I need to remediate. I could just kind of run a report and figure out what that match field is. And that's a way easier way than what I was doing, which was opening each one and unopening the order and match linking manually and then reopening. It's a pain.
We certainly used to have to do the same thing. This is a more recent development, if I'm remembering correctly, and Kim could tell you for sure. And if you have questions for Kim, anyone in the group, I'd be happy to put you in touch with her. She's been working on our order job profiles from the jump when we migrated 3 years ago now. So she's definitely our resident expert.
Actually, can I revisit that? I was actually busy typing notes, and I think that I missed something that has been a pain point for us too, which is these orders that get partial. So we go straight to open, but sometimes when data import chokes, we end up with a bunch of pending orders. And we have assumed that we have to go and manually open those. Can you explain? So you are able, how are you able to update the order through data import? I just didn't think that that was possible. Can you show us that job profile?
Yes, and I don't think it's using the Folio business logic to open the order. Does that mean something to you?
So how are you triggering it?
The match profile uses, and this is specifically for so it's these two match profiles. I hope that's small. So the match to the POL number from the incoming mark, or a match to the vendor reference number which is what we get in the files delivered for approval titles. So that's already baked in there. It comes from our vendor.
But what actions are you taking on the
Oh, I see. I
records
see. Sorry. Yes.
that
Okay.
trigger that business logic?
So
Thank you.
it is update the instance based on that match. Does that
And that changes the, that updates the order record.
I believe so. But,
Okay. Yeah.
you know, I've my information could be apocryphal. And I'm sorry I can't give you more solid details.
No, you've given us a lot of hope. So we can explore that. We can explore that at another time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I did not mean to put you on the spot.
No,
I just
no.
got really excited too.
Well, it's I know at least that it has been a pain point here for a while. I'm happy to also send screenshots of job profiles to folks who are interested.
Okay, thank you so much. Are there any other questions? So I actually have a question for you, Kevin. You mentioned that you're only doing data import with one vendor and one of your smaller vendors. Is there a reason why you are not using data import more broadly?
Oh, it's simply because it was already set up for me by we use a large vendor. We use Harassowitz for a lot of our stuff, and that's already because it's a multi-subject vendor. It's already been set up through our central acquisitions department, even though we do a lot of the ordering and receiving locally at our library. So I only had to set this up for one of our other vendors who only supplies music materials.
I
But
gotcha.
yeah,
That
so
makes
it
total
wasn't, it's,
sense.
yeah, it's not because we couldn't do it with the other vendor. It was just because this was the one that needed it.
Well, thank you all for sharing. If anyone has any questions, you can post them in Slack and we can continue this conversation there. I would like to continue this series with some more demonstrations. Maybe in September. So if you're using data import in production or you're gearing up and you want to share your processes, please reach out to me. I may be reaching out to you soon. I've also been thinking about these pain points and that have come up, and we have some of those, and we traditionally have not found ourselves focusing in any systematic way on JIRAs or issues associated with order imports. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't look towards another joint meeting where we have discussion of these pain points, because I know that some of them have JIRAs, and some of them don't. So how can we facilitate at getting these topics into our topic rotation? And have meetings in a way to make sure that we have stakeholders from other SIGs, like the acquisition SIG or those who are experiencing this but don't regularly attend data import at the table while we're having these discussions. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts about that, but that is one thing I'm thinking of trying to coordinate as well, based on today's demonstrations. Okay. Well, that wraps up our agenda for today. Thank you again, everyone. I really appreciated seeing and learning from your processes. I'll see everyone next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.